All right, let's open with a word of prayer and we'll start. Father, we just thank you so much for this Torah portion, and I just pray that the words that come out of my mouth will be your words as you give them to me. And any word that comes out of me that's not from you but fall to the ground. And let those who hear it have their eyes and ears open for the things that you have. In Yeshua's name, amen. All right, let's begin with a small recap from the previous Torah portion. First, Aaron and his sons were dedicated to Yahweh. And that was through a whole process of them being separated out for 7 days. Then on the eighth day was now we're going to consecrate the children of Israel and tie them to the priesthood. And they're going to be tied to them in a way that they're going to know that when the priests say something, they need to do it. And this is a continuation of what we've already seen. So we start off with this in this Torah portion. Now we get to see how the priests are going to take, so they're going to be shown that they're unclean or impurity that's in the camp and how to deal with it. So this is what the commission of the priests were in Leviticus 10 through 11 verses. So you must distinguish between what is holy and what is common, what is unclean and what is clean. You must teach the Israelites all the statutes that Yahweh has spoken to them through Moses. So this is a setup for all that we've just read. And this is a very tedious thing that we have to go in seclusion for 7 days, come out after 7 days, you're going to be re-examined. And if it's something that's questionable, they may be put back in for 7 days. But something that's definitely, that is a leprosy or a skin disease that is not going away and is spreading throughout the body, then they're going to be declared unclean and they're going to be put out of the camp. This is a direct tie to what we see today. And when we're unclean before Yahweh, he separates us out. And we are put outside of not just the camp, but all of the kingdom at times because we're so disobedient to him. Almost all of these are attached to being unclean in a way that is would make us ritually impure to stand before Yahweh. Now, does it mean that we can't do things day to day within our own houses? No. What it means is that we have to maintain our level of cleanliness before Yahweh and that we need to be pure before him. That means single-mindedness, single heart before him. As with any true citizens of any country, there are rights and responsibilities that everyone is expected to live under. In America, we have what's called a driver's license, and most countries have the same thing. With this driver's license, we not only agree to the terms and conditions of that license when we get it, but also to any future changes that may come. So we're also saying we'll agree to that. Well, Israel was in the same situation. Prior to this was the time when Moses went up into the mountain to get the Torah, the Ten Commandments, and they were expected. They said that we will do what you say. So they solidified it. He went up and Yahweh wrote him down on a tablet. And by the time he came down, they were already in disobedience. They already violated the kingdom rules. They already were set aside for destruction. And he told Moses, get away from me. I'm going to destroy them all because of what they've done. And Moses pleaded with him, interceded for the children of Israel again. And then we have what we see today. It is now we have an expansion of the law. Say now you have to go in, instead of being Melchizedekly priesthood, Levitical priesthood. Everything changed at that point. So even though we agree to it and not knowing totally what it means, it's our responsibility to find out what it means. How do we live it out? What's he expect of us on a day-to-day basis? So according to this Torah portion, we see a continuation of the clean and unclean laws. Yahweh separated the clean and the unclean, just as much as he did in Genesis, where he separated the light from the darkness, the earth from the water, the sky, the water in the sky and the water below, and he separated out all these things out of the chaos that was created by the Hasatan, the enemy, who sowed in all this discord, and he had to destroy the earth. And so now we see this being carried out again on Mount Sinai. The enemy is sowing discord, and he's constantly doing this in our lives. He puts in the tares in the wheat, and he And so at the end of the days, he's going to have us separate, he's going to separate the tares from the wheat. So this is not the way of the world. Okay, so anyways, back to what I was saying earlier, Yahweh separates the clean and unclean. We start with the women who gave birth to a boy or a girl. Now, when the church looked at this, they're saying, well, she sinned. No, she did not sin. She was not natural body function that he told us to go and prop and to grow and increase in our seed and our numbers. This is not a sin. This is just cleanliness of the body. Now it has to rest, and now it has to be made whole again. She has to heal up, and the time of her cleansing was determined if it was a boy or a girl. And a boy was 33 days plus the time the 7 days before, and then he was circumcised, and now she gets to rest another 33 days and spend that time with her son. And then there's a time of weaning. There's a time of all these things. It is a season for all these times. We should not. So this is not the way the world does it. No, they jump from one relationship to the next relationship to uncleanliness, and they keep doing this over and over again, bringing condemnation on themselves. So out of this, the entirety of the world, he chose us, and we get to do these commands. And we should count it joyous, not a burden. The next set of commands deals with discharges. First, it's with the men, and then to the women. With the men, we find a different set of circumstances, not just like the women who naturally has these problems month after month, and it's just a constant battle with her that until she reaches the age where she's no longer menstruating, she is now in a different state. But until she's done raising children, until she can't have any more children, she has to deal with this on a month-to-month basis. It doesn't mean that she's done something wrong. This is just a natural way of things to happen. The world doesn't do it that way. But we get to do it that way. And he commands us to do this, and he shows us that by touching or sitting on or doing these things with her, that requires us to do wash her clothes most of the time, and we're unclean till evening. We just accidentally touch something that she sat on or sat on it. We wash her clothes, and then we're clean at the evening. If we have men have relations with this woman while she's in her flow, then it's the same thing. He has to wait 7 days and all these things. So remember, this is not a sin to have children. These laws are mainly for about being ceremonially unclean. Even Yeshua's mother was on ceremonially unclean. She couldn't go to the temple until her 7 days were finished, and then she could go and present Yeshua to them to be circumcised. So these commandments should not be considered foreign to us in by this way. Rather, they are to protect us from Yahweh consuming us for approaching him in the state of being unclean. So he separates this out, and when we approach him, we have to come with cleanliness, clean hands, and a pure heart. So here's the situation. We are unclean just because are we unclean just because we entered the marketplace and people are everywhere? No, not necessarily, because we don't know who we encounter through the day. But it's our responsibility to maybe if we have some doubt that maybe we accidentally rubbed against a woman who was in her monthly flow, which she shouldn't have been out there in the first place, yeah, we can take a shower and get clean until be unclean until evening. It's not to say that we not only that we sit or lie with that person, that the requirements are is that we wash our clothes and we're unclean until evening. Now, if we had other things going on, that's something different. This brings up an example of what Yeshua went through in Matthew 9, verses 20 and 22. Just then a woman who had been suffering from a chronic bleeding for 12 years came up from behind him and touched the fringe of his garment. For she had been saying to herself, if I just could touch his garment, I will be healed. And when Yeshua turned around and he saw her, he said, take heart, daughter, your faith has healed you. And the woman was healed from that moment. And then in Luke 8:41 expounds on this a little bit more. So it's 8:41 through 48. Just then a man named Jairus arrived. He was a ruler of the synagogue. He fell down at Yeshua's feet and begged him to come to his house because he had his only daughter who was about 12 years old, and she was dying. As he went, the crowds pressed tightly around him, and there was a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years. Yet, although she had paid the physicians all she had to live on, she could not be healed by anyone. She approached Jesus from behind and touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately the flow of blood stopped. And Jesus said, "Who touched me?" As everyone was denying it, Peter and those with him said, "Master, the crowds are pressing in, crowding you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" But Yeshua said, "Someone touched me because I know the power has gone out from me." Then the woman saw that she did not escape his notice. She came trembling and touched and fell at his feet before Yeshua in the presence of all the people, for she told him why she had touched him and how she was healed immediately. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has saved you. Go in peace." Now she could have been stoned because she was unclean and did not warn anybody around her that she was unclean. And she touched the rabbi. They called him a teacher, Yeshua, the Messiah. She could have been at a peril of her own death, and he forgave her and declared her clean. So she still had to go to the priest, and she still had to present her gift, as it says in Moses' writings. If you noticed what was going on, Yeshua was in the middle of the crowd. Did Yeshua become unclean from the woman? It appears by the writing he did not. Because I think we miss an important point here. But it does not say that after that woman with the issue of blood who had touched him, then it says that he went and entered the leader of the synagogue's house and touched the dead girl's hand. She was already dead. And yet that would make him unclean as well. It does not mention the fact that he washed himself and his clothes. In fact, it does not mention or record that the disciples who were with him washed themselves and their clothes. And touching a dead person, that could even be a greater problem for him. But it doesn't say that he did this or didn't do this. Because we miss something very vital here is the Hebrew idioms and also the customs of the day. It would have been understood that he would have already done that, or he was going to do that night or later on before sundown. Just because it's not written in there does not necessarily mean he didn't do it or his disciples didn't do it. By this, when you look at the accusations that Yeshua was in his trial, nobody said anything to the contrary that he cleansed himself after doing such an event. In fact, they always clambered around him and asked him tons of questions, challenging his own authority. But I don't see anywhere where they challenged him on these two main topics here. In Colossians 2:20 through 22, if you died with Christ to the basic principles of the world, why do you submit yourself to its rules as if you were still living in the world? Do not touch, do not taste, do not handle. All these rules in the end in destruction when they are used, because they are in accordance with human commands and teachings. So is the author here talking about the Torah? Or is he talking about something else? What he's talking about here is about the Talmud and all of its writings and all the different little rules and everything like that. They had rules upon rules. So many, much so, it looks like the United States might have more now, but at a certain point, they paled in comparison. We start with a few basic rules that's in the Torah, and they said, well, with electricity, you can't turn a switch on. You can't turn it off on the Sabbath. You can't open the refrigerator because you're maybe afraid the light would come on because you didn't turn the little Shabbat switch on the elevator. On the refrigerator. You can't push a button on the elevator. You can't do any of these things because it's called work in their venue. But I don't see anything like that in the Torah where it says you can't do such things. Yet electricity wasn't invented then, so the rabbis got together and devised all these extra rules that they had to follow. And for the vast majority of those Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Jews, they follow them. But it's not going to get them any closer to being in the kingdom. And this is what our whole goal is, to be in the kingdom. And how do you do that? By following the simple basic rules that he already put in the Torah. There's nothing more to that. What religion has done is they added to the Torah of Yahweh, in many cases circumvented it. This is what man-made rule that Paul was talking about here. Back to Luke, if Yeshua was unclean by what the Torah said, then why did Jairus allow Yeshua, who the woman had touched, then after taking the girl by the hand who was dead, did that say that he was unclean? According to Torah, yes. Perhaps we're missing, again, something very vital here. Just because something isn't written does not necessarily mean it hasn't gone on or wasn't going to go on. It's just not part of it, because the audience were going to be people who were in the Jewish mindset already doing those things. He wouldn't have been able to go on to the temple if he was in a state of uncleanliness, because if he didn't mikvah or didn't get bathed, he wouldn't have been allowed in. And they would have barred him from entry. So this is the main thing that we've been combating for over 1,000 years and plus, that the Jews have messed this all up, and by their own admission, they're unclean as well. Acts 10:10-33. And he became hungry and wanted to eat, but while they were preparing the meal, that he is Peter here, he fell into a trance. He saw heaven open up and an object coming down. It was like a large sheet being let down to the earth by its four corners. In it were all kinds of four-footed animals and reptiles and of the earth, of birds and the sky. The voice said to him, "Peter," or "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "Certainly not, Lord, for I have never eaten anything impure or unclean." Yet the voice came to him a second time, "What God has made clean, you must not continue to call unclean." This happened three times, and then the object was immediately taken up to the heaven. While Peter was inwardly perplexed about what the vision he had might mean, just then men who were sent by Cornelius arrived, and they asked for directions to Simon's house and were standing at the gate. They called out, asking if Simon, who was also called Peter, was staying there as a guest. And while Peter was still in deep thought about this vision, the Spirit said to him, "See, three men are looking for you. Now get up, go downstairs, and don't hesitate to go with them, because I have sent them." And Peter went down to the men and said, "I am the one you're looking for. Why have you come?" They replied, "Cornelius the centurion is a righteous and God-fearing man, who is highly respected by the whole Jewish nation. He was directed by a holy angel to send for you to come to his house and to listen to what you have to say." So Peter invited them in and received them as guests. The next day, Peter got up, got ready, and left with them, and some of the brothers from Joppa along with him. The following day, he arrived at Caesarea. Cornelius was expecting him, and he called together his relatives and close friends. As Peter was about to enter the house, Cornelius met him and fell at his feet and worshipped him. But Peter helped him up and said, "Stand up, I am just a man." And while he talked with him, Peter went inside and found many people gathered there. He said to them, "You understand how unlawful it is for a Jewish man to associate or visit anyone who is not a Jew. But God showed me that I should no longer continue to call anyone impure or unclean. This is why I came out without objection when you sent for me. May I ask you why you have sent for me?" And Cornelius replied, From 4 days ago to this hour I have been fasting. At the ninth hour I was praying in my house when a man in shiny clothes suddenly stood in front of me. He said, "Cornelius, your prayers have been heard, and your gifts to the poor have been remembered in God's sight. Therefore, send to Joppa and call for Simon, who is called Peter. He is staying as a guest in the house of Simon the tanner by the sea. When he comes, he will speak to you. So I sent for you immediately, and it was good for you to come. Now then, we are here, all here in the presence of God, to listen to everything that the Lord has instructed you to say. Was Peter unclean because he entered the house of a Gentile? No. The lesson is that Yahweh does not declare us unclean unless we have a discharged skin disease or come in contact with the dead body. If we touch these people with who need to do, all we need to do is bathe and wash our clothes, and we're unclean until the evening. So where did Peter get this idea? It was unlawful for him to enter a Gentile's house. This was from the teachings of the rabbis. By the way, shedding light on, I found only two references in the Apocrypha writings. That one was in Tobit 1:10-12. And when we were carried away to captives into Nineveh, all my brothers and those that were of my kindred did eat the bread of the Gentiles, but I kept myself from eating because I remembered God with all my heart. And again in Judith 12:1-4, it says, Then he commanded to bring her in where his plate was set, and he bade that they should prepare for her his own meats, that she should drink his own wine. And Judith said, I will not eat of it, lest there be an offense, but a provision shall be made for me of the things that I have brought. So in these two references, we see that it's not in the Torah, but rather Peter was convinced that what should be done. So he had his own determination and the teachings that he's had since he was a little boy. It was unlawful for him to go into a Gentile's house. But nowhere in the Torah does it say that. Because how in the world is anybody who is not a believer going to get the gospel if we don't go to them? So I could not find anything in the Talmud that was just an out-and-out quote, you shall not do this. But I believe the teachings are coming from the rabbis reiterating from these extra-biblical texts that they believe, and probably some of that was fear-based because when they did go to the Gentiles, some of them were killed from a history standpoint. So they might have made a general rule saying don't go into a Gentile's house because they may kill you, but from what Peter says, they were unclean. Well, there is some general there's something about that. There is some truth to that. They were afraid also that if they went to a Gentile's house, they might be eating unclean food. And by them eating unclean food would make you unclean by them eating that. I don't know how they connected the two together, but that's how they did it. So Peter struggled with this to the point that Paul had to get up his face on one occasion. When the people from Jerusalem, his fellow Jews there, came and visited where he was at, he was eating with the Gentiles. When he saw them coming, he separated himself. This is an Acts. When he saw them come, he separated himself, ate at their table, who just came, and abandoned those Gentiles. And it showed the Gentiles, you have a double standard, Peter. And Paul got in his face about it. He said, what are you doing? You're teaching them one thing and you're doing the opposite. We have to be consistent in the message that God is giving us and when we're giving it to other people. We can't say one thing and be doing something else. Throughout this life, we will encounter hundreds of people who are in various states of uncleanliness. Are we going to pass them by and ignore them, or will we be like the Good Samaritan? The choice is ours. In other words, the Good Samaritan was the only one. This guy was, this parable that Yeshua was saying, that this guy was beaten so badly, he was stripped naked, left beside the road, half dead. Two people under Judaism went by him, went on the other side of the road, and left him for dead because they would be ceremonially unclean. And they couldn't stand that because it was getting ready to be close to the Passover. But the Samaritan looked at the man and had pity on him, bound him up, put him on his own donkey, brought him into an inn, paid for all of his things that he would need, and that he would be healed by the time he left there. And he said, if anything is lacking, I will make it back. I will come, when I come back, I'll pay you back for it. So back to this. Luke 10:25 through 37 talks about just what I just said. It said, just then an expert of the law stood up to test Yeshua, saying, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he asked. "How do you read it? What do you read there?" He replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." He said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this and you will have, and then you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Yeshua, "And who is my neighbor?" Yeshua replied, "A man going down the road, down from Jerusalem to Jericho, he fell among robbers and stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead." It just so happened that a priest who was going down that way, but when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. In the same way, a Levite who happened to go there, but when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. A Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was. He saw him, and he felt sorry for the man. He had compassion on him, my words. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. He put them on his own animal. He took him to the inn and took care of him. The next day he left and took 2 denarii and gave it to the innkeeper. And he said, "Take care of him. Whatever extra you spent, I will repay you when I return." Which of these three do you think acted like a neighbor to him? "Go and do likewise." In this Torah portion, we see that people can have varying things wrong with them, yet Yahweh cares for them and he protects the community at large. He separates them out, not because he's condemning them, but because he cares so much about the entire community. He's protecting the community and hoping the person repents if there's something in his life that requires him to, and he would be made whole again. What a good king he is. So when we see someone in need, do we pass them by, as I stated earlier, or even if he is your enemy? You might win him in the kingdom. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Pleasing the king must be our foremost thinking. We must love him with our whole heart, our mind, and our soul. Blessings to you.